Welcome to Thursday's programme. How you doing? Another glorious day across the UK, particularly here in Salford. It's the BBG. Who else would it be? I'm with you for as long as I'm with you today. Thanks for joining me. As usual, you may tweet me. I give you permission. It's at BBG Richie. Do it then.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Do you know what I didn't do at 25 minutes past 4 o'clock, which I do every other day at 4 o'clock or quarter past, or 20 past? I forgot to turn on the stream, and it dawned on me at 5 to 5, the stream isn't on, so apologies for any concern caused. But I was always here in studio getting ready to talk to you. It's Thursday's programme, the 22nd of April 2021, with me, Richie Allen, the baldiest gammon this side of Timbuktu. I will be definitely reading out your tweets. I know I always say that, and then I get wrapped up in conversations with my guests, and I don't always remember to read the tweets out. But thanks for sending them in anyway. Thank you. It's me and you today to chat about a few things, a bit more relaxed today. It's been a busy week on the programme. And first of all, I should say, before I lose the run of myself, I should say happy Earth Day to you, you climate-wrecking monster, you. More on happy Earth Day soon. Now, there's a bit of censorship going on with Spotify. I've had it confirmed. Spotify hasn't kicked the podcast of this live radio show. It hasn't kicked it off Spotify yet, but it might do. That is of no consequence to me whatsoever. And it isn't. What's been happening is I've been uploading the program to my parent company, but Podomatic, okay? I spend money with Podomatic. I pay Podomatic to host my podcast all the time, right? So at the end of every live show, I take the recording, I put it on Podomatic, and I pay them for that privilege. It immediately, automatically then goes to whatever podcast provider you use. So it'll go to Podbean, it'll go to iTunes, anyone you can think of. It will go to iHeartRadio, and it will go to Spotify, but Spotify's been censoring it. And the show, ordinarily, is a two-hour show. The music is edited out. Once I edit out the music, you've got about an hour and 48 to an hour and 52 minutes on average. Last couple of days, it has been censored by Spotify, and it looks like the episodes are 30 minutes long, when we know better. So anyway, that's what they're doing. And if you are listening to it live, and maybe you ordinarily get the podcast later on, go to Podomatic. First of all, as a given, you should go to Podomatic. Okay? And remember, it's always live. Now, I like Podomatic because about 2 to 3 years ago, when YouTube began demonetizing people and kicking people off, and you remember, they did it to me, I used to have a YouTube channel with over 100,000 subscribers until they deleted it. And at that time, Podomatic said they swore a blood oath. Podomatic said it would never, ever censor or delete a podcast, any podcast, not just mine, on the basis of its opinions on religion or race or politics or whatever. The only time it would get involved was if anybody was inciting violence or anything like that, something that was illegal. So they swore, and I've been with Podomatic now for years. That's where I upload the live show, and I will continue to do that. That's where you should go. Don't depend on Spotify or iTunes or anywhere else. Driving tests resumed today in the UK. Not ordinarily anything you or I would be interested in. It's not exactly independent news, is it, or alternative news? But it's an interesting one. 450,000 driving tests had been cancelled in the last 12 months. Lots of nervous-looking kids beginning their tests today at testing centres around the UK. It just brought it back to me, you know, because I don't care who you are or how hard you think you are. It's a nerve-wracking thing doing the old driving test. Now, I did pass first time, and there are people who will verify that if you don't believe me, although I nearly made a complete balls of it. Because when we came out of the testing centre to get into the car, my instructor, who had all the personality of a wet cardboard box, by the way, complete dipstick, my fellow had no humour about him. He said to me, oh yeah, before we start, read me the registration number of the car, the blue car over there, 20 feet. And momentarily, I couldn't read it because I'd gotten bladdered the night before. Not so bladdered that I was probably over the limit. I don't think I was, but I was a bit bleary-eyed. And I couldn't quite read it. And I took my glasses off and I'm sticking my forefingers into my eyes and twisting my eyes around. And then I put the glasses back on. I still couldn't read it. So I just used a Jedi mind trick on him. I said, sure, I gave you that license plate number a minute ago. And he said, yes, you gave me that license plate number a minute ago. No, in the end, I was able to read it. And I aced the test. I just did what he taught me to do, and I passed it first time. Did you pass it first time? Or did you kill a group of nuns at a pedestrian crossing, did you, and fail? Let me know for the crack at BBG Richie. I'll be reading those tweets out a bit later on. 5:06. Now, the Mail Online this afternoon. Britain's coronavirus death rate, says the Mail, could be close to zero because a portion of the tiny number of people dying from the disease will pass away from natural causes. Experts claimed today as a raft of official data showed the virus is still firmly in retreat. And the Department of Health's daily death figure includes anyone who dies of any cause within 28 days of a positive test, meaning patients who succumb to cancer, suffer a heart attack, or get hit by a car within 4 weeks would be counted. Now, you know this. It's funny because to read the Daily Mail today and one or two of the other tabloids, it's almost like it has dawned on them today, 12 months later, that they have been including somebody. They've been attributing COVID deaths to people who died of other things within 28 days of a positive test, which basically blows the lid off the ridiculous hoax anyway, as you and I know, right? They count people who might have basically fell getting out of the shower and banged their head off the soap dish and split themselves open and bled to death. They count that as COVID if the poor bugger tested positive within the previous 28 days. It's madness. And they're talking about this again today. Maybe they're guilty at the Mail Online. Maybe they think we should have been speaking about this more. Oxford University professor Dr. Jason Oakey, he said that when a lot of people are swabbed, because apparently they're testing a million people a day in this country, many of those who test positive, and there's nothing wrong with them, will inevitably die naturally of causes unrelated to coronavirus. And still they're queuing for their tests, the great unwashed, the plebs. They're queuing for their tests, and sadly they're still queuing for their vaccines as well. They are. A couple of things on richieallen.co.uk you might want to take a look at, you might want to pay attention to. One of them concerns summer holidays, and you might want to know this because you might be planning on a summer holiday and you might, I don't know. I mean, I don't know who listens to me. You might be getting a vaccine just because I'm not getting a vaccine or anybody I know. Nobody I know is getting a vaccine, but you might want one. You might take the risk. And listen, that's your own business because you might want to go on holiday or because you might have a loved one living overseas that you've not seen for some time. So I understand that. So let me just bring this up. So vaccine passports then. The Telegraph claimed an exclusive this morning. That's the newspaper. It says that the Department of Transport wants an official certification scheme to be ready and up and running by the 17th of May, which is about a month away, right? And it's intended that fully vaccinated British holidaymakers will get a document to enable them to sidestep tests and quarantines. Now, according to the Telegraph, and I wrote about this myself, more than 20 countries have indicated that they will require proof of vaccination before admitting tourists. Okay, 20 countries have said, yes, we will want to know whether you've had your vaccines or not before we allow you into our swimming pools and our hotels and our apartments. Greece is one of them, in Spain and others. So that's in the news today. 17th of May, they want to have this up and running. Michael Gove, the squirrely little dude that he is, and Jonathan Van Tam, the Deputy Chief Medical Officer, they've been in Israel this week looking at the domestic vaccine passport scheme there, which the Israelis have been running, I believe, for about 2 months now. Right, if you're in Israel, you want to go to the gym, the cinema, blah, 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 the shopping centre, the pub, you've got to provide proof on a so-called green pass, which is a digital thing. You've got to provide proof that you have, in fact, been vaccinated. And they're desperately keen to bring that in here in the UK as well. But then I don't need to tell you that, do I? And a very interesting story, which a couple of the tabloids covered, and I grabbed it as well, about a woman in Glasgow called Sarah Boykman, probably Boykman, B-E-U-C-K-M-A-N-N, Sarah Boykman. She got her first dose of the old AstraZeneca, the much maligned AstraZeneca jab, which has, of course, been linked to blood clotting, serious blood clotting, which has in some instances that we know of anyway, led to the death of people. Okay, they claim that it's very, 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 very rare and very, 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 very unlikely. But the fact is, it is a possibility. But a woman called Sarah Boykman, she had her first dose of the Oxford AstraZeneca jab, began to feel a bit of tingling in her legs and a bit of a rash developed around her ankles. She obviously wasn't thrilled about that, eh? Who would be? So she phoned the doctor, and by the time an appointment had been made, her skin was already blistering and she was rushed to hospital. She was in such a bad state, was this woman, that she believed her legs might have to be amputated. She was 16 days in hospital, and skin experts have actually said, yes, it must be the vaccine that did it. And other experts, of course, were rushed out to say, oh, well, this is extremely, extremely, extremely rare. It's just very, very rare. Don't worry about it. That's the standard response. Get somebody on the air. Get somebody to quote from who says, listen, don't worry about it. Don't worry at all. And I actually glimpsed, the only photograph of the woman's legs I could get was one I nicked from the Daily Mail's website. I couldn't get an unfiltered, hang on now, I couldn't get an unpixelated picture because the Mail ran a picture of this woman's legs heavily pixelated. So you couldn't really see, well, you can kind of see you can see the dark shades of red on her legs anyway. So I grabbed one, but I did later on this afternoon see an uncensored photograph of this woman's legs. And holy Jesus is all I can say to you, by the way. Dreadful. But of course, nothing to see here. Please disperse. There is nothing to see here. That's the standard approach from the media and from the experts they kind of roll out, you know what I mean? Anyway, I think we've got Harry on the line from Aspen, as a matter of interest. Harry, your father had a reaction to the AZ jab. What happened, Harry?
His head fell off.
What?
His head fell off.
Yeah, it's a coincidence. It's a coincidence. We didn't see any heads falling off in the trials, is what they'll tell you. And then they look into it, won't they? And they'll come back in about 4 weeks, the MHRA, and say, yes, okay, there is a 1 in a million chance that your head will fall off after having the AZ jab, but don't worry about it. There's more chance of your head falling off if you get coronavirus than there is if you get the jab, so have the jab. I had a run-in with some people on Twitter today who are galactically thick, irredeemably stupid. I made a rather childish but pertinent analogy about the claims that there is a 1 in 250,000 chance of you getting a blood clot. They say there's a 1 in a 250,000 chance of getting a blood clot. Have the jab. Now, blood clot could kill you. It's as simple as that, right? Okay. So this is what they say. Queen played to 250,000 people in Rio de Janeiro years ago. So the idea is one of them would get a clot. So have the jab, it's safe, they say. My analogy was, if you said to Jonathan Van Tam or Matt Hancock, listen, go and have a swim in this part of the sea. There is a great white shark. I foolishly said sharks today. I just made a mistake. Of course, great whites hunt alone. So anyway, I said, look, if you said to Jonathan Van Tam or one of these idiots, one of these proper dipsticks, I'll tell you what, I'll take the jab if you swim in a sea where there is a great white shark, even though there's only a 1 in 250,000 chance that the fecker will come up and bite your head off. My point was, Jonathan Van Tam, Hancock and the other goons wouldn't swim in that water. They wouldn't. They would say, well, 1 in 250,000, that's a bit narrow still for me. I'd rather give it a miss. I'd rather hold on to my head rather than feed it to a great white shark, you see? That's my point about the vaccines. I don't want a blood clot. Oh, well, it's only a one. No, well, I'm not prepared to take that chance is kind of the point I was trying to make today on the old Twitter kind of a thing. Anyway, loads to talk about this afternoon. We're going to talk climate change in a couple of moments. I bet you're looking forward to me talking about climate change to you. The Richie Allen Radio Show is live from Salford. Beautiful Thursday afternoon with me, the BBG. This is a great tune. Aretha Franklin and George Michael. Rest in peace, George. And it's I Knew You Were Waiting from 1987, I think. Aretha Franklin, George Michael, I Knew You Were Waiting. 20 minutes past five, drive time. Richie Allen with you for, well, for the next wee while anyway. Good job. Good afternoon to Angela Lambert. How you doing, Angela? Richie, you're going to have a difficult time this evening improving on your other three shows this week. Thanks, Angela. That's very nice of you. It's only myself I'm in competition with, though, you know. In all fairness, somebody once said to me, who's the biggest threat to you being the most listened to independent radio show in Europe? And my immediate reply was, me, I might fall down and hurt myself and not be able to broadcast, is what I said. Hi to Shifty, hi to Debs in Wales and Ines in Wales. How you doing? Having a barbecue on the deck of the cabin, listening to me. That's nice, that, isn't it? Listen to the radio while having a bit of a barbie. Hi to Julie Ballard. Thanks, Julie. I'll check that out a bit later on. To Noel Cox. How you doing? Yeah, of course, I should have said R.I.P. Aretha Franklin too. It did occur to me that Aretha died a couple of years ago. Of course, the Queen of Soul. R.I.P. Aretha. I'll be accused of racism, no doubt, if I don't correct myself at the speed of light. Good evening to William in Scotland as well. Sean says, Richie, am I the only one who has not had a CV test, a coronavirus test? I will not comply. You're not the only one, Sean. I would doubt that too many people who listen to this programme have submitted themselves or subjected themselves to a coronavirus test. I would imagine most people who listen to this programme wouldn't, unless they've had no choice, unless their job has asked them to do it, or unless they needed it for travel. It's the lesser of two evils. I'm not endorsing it now. Calm down before you start getting excited. I will never take a coronavirus test. Ever. And I have that luxury. But for some people, it's the lesser of two evils. For some people, it's like, well, if I can travel and the only thing I need to do is pass the test and I don't need the vaccine, well, I might just take the test. And some friends of mine have said that to me. And they don't want to be and they will not be vaccinated. But they've got people overseas they need to see, business and family. Anyway, let's move on because, my God, we've just talked absolute garbage for 21 and a half minutes. But it's a skill, you see. It's a skill. I was born with it. US President Joe Biden has told a major summit today, a two-day summit which began today, that we are in a decisive decade for tackling the old climate change. You probably know that he announced that the US would cut carbon emissions by between 50 and 52% below levels at levels. Let me say that again. He pledged to cut carbon emissions by 50 to 52%. below 2005 levels. And he said he would achieve this, or the United States would, by the end of this decade. Now, the new target was unveiled at this virtual summit today of 40 global leaders. It essentially doubles the US's previous promise. You might remember US President Donald Trump didn't seem too keen on any of this. Something we agree on. Anyway, the Americans hope they're ambitious. New plan will get the Chinese, the Indians and others to go further before November's COP26 meeting. That's the United Nations annual climate change meeting. It takes place in Glasgow, glorious Glasgow, this coming November. And would you believe it? One of the keynote speakers over the 2 days is good old Billy Gates. Good old Billy Gates. Billy Poison Jabs is speaking at the President Biden-led summit. Yes, Billy Gates. Just think about that. Anyway, here is Joe Biden sounding very serious and, sadly, just a tad senile as well.
Because scientists tell us that this is the decisive decade. This is the decade we must make decisions that will avoid the worst consequences of the climate crisis. We must try to keep the Earth's temperature and to an increase of 1.5 degrees Celsius. You know, the world beyond 1.5 degrees means more frequent and intense fires, floods, droughts, heat waves, and hurricanes, tearing through communities, ripping away lives and livelihoods. Increasingly, dire impacts to our public health. It's undeniable, the idea of accelerating and punishing the reality that will come if we don't move. We can't resign ourselves to that future. We have to take action, all of us. And this summit is our first step on the road we'll travel together, God willing, all of us, to and through Glasgow this November and the UN Climate Conference.
Glasgow.
Climate Change Conference. You know, to set our world on a path to secure, prosperous, and sustainable future. The health of communities throughout the world depends on it. The well-being of our workers depends on it. The strength of our economies depends on it. The countries that take decisive action now to create the industries of the future will be the ones that reap the economic benefits of the clean energy boom that's coming. You know, we're here at this summit to discuss how each of us, each country, can set higher climate ambitions that will in turn create good-paying jobs, advance innovative technologies, and help vulnerable countries adapt to climate impacts. We have to move. We have to move quickly to meet these challenges. The steps our countries take between now and Glasgow will set the world up for success. To protect livelihoods around the world and keep global warming at a maximum of 1.5 degrees Celsius. We must get on the path now in order to do that.
Yes, he was speaking about Glasgow, was President Joe Biden. I won't subject you to any more clips of these leaders. Interesting, of course, they're going to Glasgow in November because we all know, and Sky News knows, that in Glasgow, delivery drivers and bin men, they know all there is to know about climate change.
You're born and bred in Glasgow and you've noticed the weather changing.
The rain seems to be getting heavier. Sometimes you get up in the morning and there's bucketing it down.
I'll never get tired of that as long as I live. So it's Glasgow later this year. That'll be the biggie. COP26. Lots of talk about this today, but nobody really wants to talk just yet about the big elephant in the room. What this will mean for people's everyday lives, this level of decarbonisation. Now, the business secretary, Kwasi Kwarteng, was on BBC Radio 4 this morning with a guy called Simon Jack. Simon Jack asked him about the changes to our lives, and this is worth listening to. Business Secretary Kwasi Kwarteng on BBC Radio 4.
I just wonder whether there's a lack of honesty that you should be telling people as you set these targets. Would you like to tell them now? Would you like to say to people, eat less meat, don't buy big cars, go abroad less often, be prepared to have surcharges if you're a frequent flyer, even have smaller families? Are you prepared to make those, you know, to tell those home truths?
As I've tried to say, a lot of the change has been societal and has not been directed by government telling people how to live their lives, but also where the government has encouraged investment in the key technologies, and you were good enough to acknowledge that. You're quite right, though, when you say that heat in buildings is a big challenge. I mean, decarbonizing heat sources and also improving energy efficiency of homes is a big challenge. And your reporter referred to the fact that we've got a heat and building strategy, which will be very clear, will be very full of policies, will be very full of directions, and that's going to be coming out only in the next couple of months.
Because at the moment, so your target is to place 600,000 gas boilers a year, starting in 2028. You've got 25 million to do. I figure in by the back of the fag packet, you'll have done 5 million out of the 25 million by 2033, when your deadline for getting rid of them hits.
Yes, so you're right to say that it's an ambitious target, but of course the phase out won't be on a straight line basis. It'll accelerate just as the uptake of electric vehicles has accelerated and is accelerating every day. And I think the adoption of these new technologies can happen very quickly.
Okay.
And I'm confident it's a stretching target. There's no doubt that it's a challenging target, but I think it's achievable.
Smaller families. Do you hear that bit in there? Smaller families. How exactly would they encourage people to have smaller families? Or would they need to encourage people? Would they even need to do that? Has the environment been tweaked to make it more difficult for people to have children? I would say yes. There's a massive fertility problem, isn't there? There's a huge male fertility problem. And they're blaming it on little bits of plastic, which I imagine are no good whatsoever and don't do any good for people. But they're blaming it on, I can't remember how to pronounce this. I can't even remember the word now. What's it called again? These plastics the that you find in kitchens, they're saying might be having the greatest impact on male fertility. But of course, that's nonsense. We live in a smog, don't we? We live in a kind of a technological smog, a Wi-Fi smog. A non-ionizing radiation smog. That's exactly right. That's having a huge effect on fertility. So they might not even need to say to people, hey, listen, to save the planet now, don't have so many children. It's increasingly becoming more difficult. I hear from more and more people through the radio show who get in touch and say things to me like they've had to go the fertility route. Can't get pregnant. Just can't get pregnant. He's shooting blanks, maybe. Got to go the fertility route, which is extraordinarily expensive. So if the non-ionizing radiation smog is having a huge impact on our health, which I think it probably is, right? That will prevent people from having children anyway, or having as many as they might like, maybe. Right? Okay. And then those who go down the fertility route, well, maybe they'll close off the fertility route, make it more difficult. Say, no, but we can't. There's too many people on this planet now. It's too warm. It's too much CO2, you know. Anyway, on another matter, we might hear from Kwasi Kwarteng a bit later, because he also spoke today about funeral attendance, which is interesting to you and to me. Climate change is madness, and the faithful are in the grip of religious mania. You've seen them breaking windows of banks in London, HSBC. Don't think for a minute that I have any sympathy with banks or banksters. Of course I don't. Of course I don't. But I choose not to vandalise other people's property. These people are crazy. You've seen them breaking windows with their hammers and chisels, looking like the children of the damned, all glassy-eyed and trance-like, Stepford children even. Maniacs. Then walking away mumbling about climate change. A woman called Zoe Cohen, a member of Extinction Rebellion, batshit crazy lunatics, these people. Zoe Cohen was asked by Sky News presenter Isabel Webster today about the vandalism, about breaking the windows of HSBC. It's criminal, right? What does Extinction Rebellion Zoe Cohen say?
Oh, it's far, far from vandalism, Isabel. I mean, it's very thought through, calm, direct action. You know, peaceful, direct action. And it's peaceful because it is proportionate and it is done with great care to not harm any life. And we really need to get in perspective, you know, damaging a little bit of glass with the enormous harm that's being done to life on Earth, and people are dying and suffering now. 200 species.
Who's dying and suffering now because of global warming? Nobody asks any of these demented, batshit crazy cat ladies. This is a cat lady on television telling you that the world is coming to end. And they put a little caption under her name. They say Zoe Cohen on the screen now, Extinction Rebellion member. So what? What does she know about it? Is anybody going to say to one of these demented cat ladies, listen, what are you basing any of this on? Give me some statistics. Give me some science there, Zoe. No, they just let them come on with their crazy cat lady haircuts and I'm jealous, and talk bollocks about climate change and people dying. It's religious mania, isn't it? What else is it?
100 species are going extinct today. We need to really get this in perspective with a little bit of glass.
Okay, but I mean, a lot of people are alienated sometimes, aren't they, by the actions that Extinction Rebellion take. I mean, seeing them wielding chisels and hammers in Canary Wharf this morning at 7 o'clock, and women being taken off into police vans, will perhaps make people question whether you have to use gimmicks to get your message across, if that's the best that you can do.
Gosh, it's far from a gimmick, Isabel. I mean, we're building on or taking from that brave tradition of the suffragettes and the Chartists before them. So it's far from a gimmick. It's these are actions of very caring, considerate activists who are thinking deeply about what they're doing and bringing a lot of care and love.
Jesus. How are you taking on the challenges of global warming there, Zoe? Well, we just kicked the shit out of HSBC's windows there. Yeah, that'll show them. And that's how we'll decarbonise the planet. That just went on and on for 5 minutes. A presenter, crazy cat woman, talking about how we're all going to die unless we do more. Yeah, unless we do more to combat climate change. 25 minutes to six, Richie. Maybe I'm a crazy cat lady, maybe. And one of the high priests of this religion is a guy called George Monbiot. You know who he is, right? You'll read him in The Guardian, of course. Yes. And it is a religion. He's one of the high priests of it. He was on BBC Politics, or the Politics Live programme today. Monbiot, listened to him talking about the fact that the government doesn't really want to explain how this is going to work, because how it's going to work is basically take every dystopian science fiction film you ever watched in your life, and you watched it and you went, Jesus, wouldn't that be a terrible world if we ever got there? That's what's coming. Listen to George Monbiot.
Yeah, so the sense is that the easy things have been done, because, you know, you can change your power sources without actually upsetting people. You still turn on the light and the light comes on. It doesn't make any difference. The really difficult thing is changing transport, is changing the way we live at home, is changing the food we eat. And to be honest, the government has shied away from that. And this is the nettle it's got to grasp.
Changing transport, he said. Changing the way we live at home. Changing the way we eat. And this is the spooky thing for me as a journalist, as a presenter. Spooky that the BBC made a decision. You will be aware of this. The BBC made a decision about 3 years ago, and a BBC insider was kind enough to send me an internal memo, which I went to town on, you might remember. And the internal memo was that the science is settled on climate change and on the need to change the world to combat climate change. The BBC said the science is settled and its production staff were no longer to go looking for balance when filling programmes with content about climate change. Absolutely mad, right? So basically, producers, right, talk about climate change as much as you want, but from the point of view that it is real, it is deadly, it is terrifying, and it needs to be tackled. There's no other explanation. You are not to bring on skeptics anymore. So these guys can talk about changing the way you drive, the way you live, the clothes you wear, the things you eat, where you can go and when you can go there. They can say whatever they want. They're given immunity, and the presenters are told not to stop them. Not to stop them. Don't stop them and say, but you're just a crazy mad bastard, really, aren't you? You can't do that. On BBC News at 1 today, it's a big, the big programme, the BBC's big show, at BBC 1, yeah, 1 o'clock, yeah, okay. I'm doing something while I'm talking to you. So BBC News at 1, it's their flagship news programme, BBC at 1. It led with the story of climate change. It led with Biden's two-day climate summit. This is 3 minutes into the report. 3 minutes. So 3 minutes past one, we're going to drop right in on a report by a BBC journalist. Just have a listen.
The UK, which also upped ambition on carbon cuts this week, says the world is moving on climate.
When we were announced as...
Now, this is Alok Sharma, used to be the business secretary. He's now a climate change minister. Alok Sharma. But listen to what happens after we hear from him. This is BBC News at 1.
As a COP26 president, less than 30% of the world economy was covered by a net zero target. We're now at 70%. So we have seen some progress. But what we need to do is to get more progress in terms of near-term emission reduction targets to 2030.
But as Greta Thunberg says, ambitious targets need to be backed up with policies that will actually lead to significant emissions reductions.
What did he say just there? He went from a politician, this is at the very beginning of the News at One, and he went from a politician straight into a child with developmental issues, a pigtailed child with developmental issues, which I have sympathy with, by the way, a child who looks as mad as a box of frogs at the best of times. And I don't say that to be cruel. And he's basically declaring her to be an authority. This is where we are now.
Reduction targets to 2030.
Listen. But as Greta Thunberg says, ambitious targets need to be backed up with policies that will actually lead to significant emissions reduction.
He might have said, as Jimmy Murphy says from Morrison's Road there, we need to do more to combat climate change. He might as well have said, well, as Stacey Costello said there from Ballybeg, we need to do more to save the planet. They've declared this kid to be an authority. And she isn't, obviously.
Reductions.
Of course it's a step in the right direction. but
mad, isn't it?
If only it was that simple that we could just invest and put money in things and that would solve the problem. Of course, that will be required as well, but it would take so much more than that. We need to be realistic and see the whole picture.
Today's meeting is designed to get the world on the right track in the run-up to the big UN climate conference the UK is due to host in Glasgow in November.
It's not Glasgow, it's Glasgow. It's Glasgow. If the president says it's Glasgow, it's Glasgow. Joe Biden. Yeah. Yeah, they've just basically anointed Greta Thunberg. They've anointed her as an authority, a schoolgirl. They went from Alok Sharma, a Tory MP, who he knows more, or he knows less about climate change probably than she does, from him into what Greta Thunberg thinks, a child with pigtails and developmental issues. There you are. And over on Sky News, presenters are testifying. Listen to this woman, Isabel Webster, introduce a guest with a statement on the dangers of climate change. She's not quoting a scientist leading into the segment. She's not quoting a politician. She's testifying. She's speaking for Sky News. Listen to this. Absolute nonsense.
Well, now, many human factors are a direct threat to biodiversity across the planet. Hundreds of species are at risk from factors like loss of habitat due to logging and farming and pollution problems like microplastics. But climate change is by far the biggest threat to all life on Earth, and the problem is growing. 2020, as we know, was the warmest year ever in Europe, and greenhouse gases are at their highest levels in 18 years. So, what commitments do we need to see from our leaders to tackle this problem? Well, joining us now is Kate Norgrove, the Executive Director of Advocacy and Campaigns for the World Wildlife Fund. A very good afternoon to you. I mean, we start by reading out the...
What a diatribe of nonsense by the presenter there before introducing that guest. Staggering stuff. No need to hear from the guest because it's just more nonsense. Let's have a tune. It's Amy Winehouse. Amy Winehouse then from the Back to Black. Or Back in Black. Back to Black is AC/DC, of course. Back in Black, is it? Jesus, Richie. It's one of those days. It's warm. It's been warm today. It's going to be warm tomorrow as well. And over the weekend, there's a big protest in London taking place on Saturday, which I've been asked to mention. I don't think I need to mention. I think there's enough information out there about it. Everybody is aware of it. But there you go. I've mentioned it anyway. Hi to Ruby D via, might be listening. How you doing? Ruby, speaking with Jackie this afternoon, I mentioned that I'd be in touch with you. I will be in touch with you right soon to set up a conversation. Fascinated by what you're doing around cannabis. Very interesting. We've not talked about that for quite a while, actually, on this programme. 14 and a half minutes. It is 2:06, the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is live, as always, from Salford. Every programme, once it's finished, is uploaded to Podomatic, where it then goes to your own podcast provider and all of that. All right, all right, all right. Let's move. Hey, listen, before we move off of climate change, there was one bit of audio that I thought you might find kind of amusing. You will have heard of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a New York congresswoman, a Democrat, very woke, or very woke now. She takes the biscuit. Last evening, she seemed to blame climate change on racism. I had to listen to this two or three times. I'm not quite sure, but I think she might be blaming climate change on the old racism there.
The climate crisis is a crisis born of injustice, and it is a crisis born of the pursuit of profit at any and all human and ecological cost.
That's right.
Which means that we must recognize in legislation that the trampling of indigenous rights is a cause of climate change. The trampling of racial justice is a cause of climate change, because we are allowing people and we are allowing ourselves to make sure to, we are allowing folks to deny ourselves human rights and deny people the right to health care, the right to housing and education.
Speaking of crazy cat ladies, did you understand a word of that? I didn't. I listened back to it two or three times and I grabbed it from Tucker Carlson's Fox News programme. It's only 30 seconds. Let's listen again. Is she blaming racism for climate change? You see, it's twisted my brain, this. She's blaming climate change on racism, right?
The climate crisis is a crisis born of injustice, and it is a crisis born of the pursuit of profit at any and all human and ecological cost.
That's right.
Which means that we must recognize in legislation that the trampling of indigenous rights is a cause of climate change.
Ah.
The trampling of racial justice is a cause of climate change, because we are allowing people and we are allowing ourselves to make sure to, we are allowing folks to deny ourselves human rights and deny people the right to health care, the right to housing and education.
There you go. Yes, well done. Hi to Pete, who says, Richie, yes, it's the Back to Black album, mate. Brilliant record. Says Pete. Pirate says cannabinoids all good. Cannabinoids. I've never smoked a joint. I've never had a cannabis cookie, a hash cookie, or none of that, because I treat my body like a temple. I'm not a druggie. I jest, of course. I don't believe that cannabis should be illegal. I certainly do not. But no, I've never taken it, never tried it. I've never smoked a cigarette or anything like that, so I have no interest in it. But I'm convinced that cannabis oil is very good for you. And does good things. Hi to Paul, who says, good evening, Richie. How you doing? It is the first time I played that song in its entirety. I think so. It might be. It might not be. Let me retweet something from Ruby Devi, an Eventbrite thing. Can I do that? I think I can. Let me just retweet it there. Fanula says she loves Amy Winehouse. R.I.P. Great tune. That. Absolutely right. Hi to Dean Smith. How you doing, Dean? Susan says, if meter-pushing companies have their way, smart meters, of course, if smart meter-pushing companies have their way, we will have nothing. Growing your own produce would not be possible on metered water. UK is tiny bollocks to the lot of them. Big business. Who pays for your lies? Those who profit, says Susan. And this is where it's all meant to go. It'll be a surveillance state, which was, I don't even think the great writers, the great prophets who have talked about this for many years, I don't even think they will be prepared for what it's going to be or what it's meant to be like. The surveillance aspect of all of this, in terms of making sure that people like you and people like me conform and that we really do comply with the carbon reduction rules and regulations. You know, that's what smart That's what the Internet of Things was all about all along. That's what smart meters, smart fridges, smart ovens, smart kitchens are meant to be about, really. Not to make, not to reduce your bills and make it easier for you to be more energy efficient. These things are sold all the time as wonderfully benevolent, kind things, decent things to make your life better. In reality, it's not. It's bollocks. The reality is, this is surveillance on steroids. This is draconian on a scale, like I said, that was previously unimaginable. For compliance, for the sake of compliance. A lot of people have written about these things, and here we are. Hi to Alan in Liverpool. How you doing, Alan? Hi to Jenny Newman. How you doing, Jenny? Hi to Faisal, who says, changing a bunch of things that do F all while tiptoeing around the corporations as if they don't have an effect on anything. That's climate wokeism. He's referring, of course, to Extinction Rebellion. And I agree with him 100%. Hi to David. A lot of you talking about ivermectin today around India. All sorts of claims about India and thousands of deaths and millions of cases of coronavirus. I don't believe a word of it, but it doesn't really matter what I believe. Hi to Jessica as well. Hi to my friend Ruth in Australia. How you doing, Ruth? Got your email. Reply to it earlier on. Let's move swiftly on then. 9 minutes to 6 o'clock. It's the Richie Allen Show. Live, as usual. From Salford. Yeah, she was actually saying that racism is the cause of climate change. Now, funerals, at the moment, 30-person limit as it stands. It's heinous. Of course it's heinous. It's unimaginably evil. It's disgusting. It's despicable. Any adjective you choose, it's dreadful. Earlier we heard from the business secretary, Kwasi Kwarteng, speaking about climate change. Here he is now on LBC Radio, this recorded earlier today, Nick Ferrari, on whether the rules on attending funerals should be or can be relaxed soon. Listen to the exchange.
And a lot of charities and others are saying that the 30-person limit on mourners is just too draconian, Secretary of State. And indeed, we witnessed it and the sad events on Saturday where the royal family obviously observed it with the Duke of Edinburgh. It's a very powerful story. Don't ruin final farewells. Secretary of State, is this something you're aware of? Is this something you're going to look at? Is it something you're going to take action on? Kwasi Kwarteng.
Look, it was a very difficult issue, Nick. And as you remember, on Saturday, I thought that procession, that ceremony was conducted with such grace and dignity. But clearly, yes, it's a very difficult thing to say goodbye to loved ones in a very restricted environment. But we do have a duty to make sure that the virus is suppressed as far as we can make it. And I think we're making progress on that. We managed to hit the April the 12th date.
But are you going to look at the
partial opening?
Tragically.
We're always reviewing, Nick, as you know, we're always reviewing data, we're always reviewing policies. But I think it's very important that we hit those dates and we stick to those dates.
So you won't relax? So thousands of people can go to the FA Cup semi-final. Thousands can attend the Crucible Sheffield to watch the snooker. I could get on an aeroplane and sit next to somebody I know with due tests and all of that, who I've never met before in my life. And I can sit in a pub garden with someone behind me who I've never met. But I can't be with. I can't go to my auntie's funeral. Explain how that works.
So, well, you can if you're one of the 30.
Let's say I'm an extended family and I'm 31.
Put that straight. But all these rules, you know, there are always going to be people who question some of the rules.
You and I know each other well. This doesn't add up, mate. This doesn't add up. You can go in a pub garden. You can have a Scotch egg behind someone you've never met in your life. You can go and watch the snooker or the football alongside people, but you can't say goodbye to auntie. Mate, this is wrong. Come on.
It's restricted to 30 people, Nick. And there have to be, there are rules. We have to suppress the virus.
You won't review that those now? Now?
We're always looking at the rules. That's how that works. People are always looking at data within government and seeing where we are. But I think it was very important that we're consistent and that we hit the dates as we said. And the one thing that you would blame me for is if we relax rules and then for whatever reason that the coronavirus spiked.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. If we relax rules and COVID comes back, you'll blame us for that, said Kwasi Kwarteng. I nearly said Alok Sharma. He's a different race entirely. Jesus, I'm a racist when I think about it. This is the thing that kills me. These rules, looking at them, when you look at them in the cold light of day, they're nothing but a bunch of arbitrary, asinine nonsense. Nonsense. You can't have more than 30 people at a funeral, but we're going to let 4,000 people in to watch the Brit Awards. We're going to have people at the FA Cup semi-final. We're going to have people in Sheffield watching snooker, but you can't have more than 30 people at a funeral. It's arbitrary bollocks, and it's the thing that vexes me most, that winds me up more than anything, that that in itself doesn't galvanise more people, that it doesn't smack more people around the face, make them realise, well, this is obviously garbage, this. They're just making it up as they go along, which they've been doing since day one, of course. Dreadful, dreadful thing for anybody to be denied the opportunity to go and give a send-off to somebody they loved based on nothing, on no evidence whatsoever. But you heard Ferrari in there, didn't you? You and I know each other very, very well, he said. I've heard Julia Hartley Brewer on talk radio say this to any number of Conservative politicians. But of course, we know each other very well, don't we? Pally, pally, chummy, chummy. As George Carlin once said famously, it's a big, big club and you and I are not in it. Here's one of the greatest songs ever written. Take That and Pray. How this didn't win Song of the Year at the Grammys in 1991, I'll never know. Travesty of justice. Go on, Gary. Better than Oasis, there's no doubt about that. Take That, Gary Barlow. That's when they were a fivesome, Jason and Howard and Robbie Williams and Marco and... Great band. Great live. Seen them live twice, would you believe? I saw Gary Barlow solo as well. Fantastic, absolutely brilliant, amazing stuff now. Amazing stuff now. The average human adult breathes in and out 12 to 20 times every minute. Did you know that? I know it because I know everything, of course. I've had to burn my encyclopedias. They're of no use to me now whatsoever. Obviously, I don't know everything. I looked it up. And with this carbon nonsense, I wonder, will people be encouraged in the near future not to breathe in and out as much as they normally do? Could you be trained? Will everybody have a figure? I will later on. I'll get a stopwatch. Although I don't need one. I think our mobile devices these days are equipped with stopwatches. So I'll time myself and see how many times I breathe in and out in the course of a minute. And see. They might do that. Breaking wind might be another thing. These are things you might be mildly amusing. They might be very droll. That's not very funny, Richie. Maybe not. But you never know what might be proposed in the coming 6 to 12 months, or even the coming 24 to 36 months, what they might come up with, you know? What devices they might come up with that you might want to wear around your face, you know? We've got a device. What is it? Well, it's a mask that you wear all the time when you're outdoors, and it's a dual-purpose mask. And you'll say, what? And they'll say, well, the first thing it does is it stops you breathing your filthy, dirty germs on everybody else outdoors. And the second thing it does is it captures your CO2 and it turns it into something harmless, which dissipates into the air. This is the sort of garbage you're going to be hearing in the next few years. I'm convinced of it. Do you want to hear more garbage? I haven't touched the George Floyd thing because I couldn't give a shit about George Floyd. I've got to be honest about it. It's not because I'm a hard-hearted person without an empathetic bone in his body. It isn't. I'm an empathetic man and I'm not hard-hearted, but I couldn't give a rat's arse about George Floyd. Policing in America, as I know because I've been covering US domestic affairs for many, many years. Posse Comitatus, the Posse Comitatus Act, which was obviously made law to prevent the military acting as law enforcers on the streets of America. Posse Comitatus, look it up. It's to prevent the army ever policing in the United States. Well, that's just been circumnavigated that Posse Comitatus Act by militarising the police. The police are a bunch of thugs. And it's not just black people they beat up and kill. They do it to everybody. Might seem sometimes that it's disproportionate and that black men and women are disproportionately targeted. I don't know if that's the truth. What I do know, because I'm an honest Injun, what I do know is black folks are given harder sentences, harsher sentences for committing similar crimes to whites. That's a fact. And if you don't like that, you can shut the feck up. It's a fact. I know this. I used to campaign on behalf of condemned black men in Jacksonville Prison in Florida and elsewhere. And I learned a lot. And I know that statistics can prove anything. I know that, well, 60% of all people know that. But we do know that black men are 6 times more likely to be sentenced to death for the exact same type of murder as their white counterpart. So let's be honest about it. There are problems, right? I didn't give an arse about George Floyd because I didn't know the guy. I just found it amusing and bizarre that white people were campaigning on the streets of Britain for justice for George Floyd. Madness. Again, evangelical religious mania, madness. Black Lives Matter seems to be stocked with lunatics, violent madmen. Did you see that scene outside that New York restaurant yesterday where diners, minding their own business in the spring, having a bit of dinner? And a group of Black Lives Matter's goons rocked up and started threatening the diners because apparently the restaurant was owned by a white dude. Heaven forbid that a white guy should own a restaurant. Listen, I don't know anything about the restaurant game. I could tell you a few things about the bar business. That's bloody hard enough. I bet you it's damn hard running a restaurant. These goons rocked up, Black Lives Matter. Couldn't give an arse about George Floyd. And it's not because I'm not empathetic. Police are turning into thugs. We're seeing it here in this country. I was at Media City 2-3 weeks ago. I think I told you this. Myself, the frog and the dog, the three of us. We make a pretty picture of the three of us. We were down in Media City in Salford, where all the lawyers are. The BBC, ITV, they're all down there, Channel 4 lawyers. And another 2 or 3 dozen other media organisations are down there as well, spinning lies about COVID and everything else. Myself and the oft-mentioned frog and our dog were down there doing our thing, and we came across some police, and you should have seen the state of them. I was going to say something, because I do, I always say something, because I've got a big gob on me. And I don't insult now, I never insult, but I have my say. But I didn't, I left it go. I had done it last year when I came across them. Anyway, there was 5 or 6 of them. Goons, armed to the teeth. Think of Arnold Schwarzenegger's platoon in Predator. With Carl Weathers and Jesse Ventura. I ain't got time to bleed. Fuckers. Tooled up to the tits. Kevlar, all the black gear, the helmets. Fucking submachine guns. This is England. This is Salford. Beautiful sunny day. I looked at him. So this is everywhere. And black people are not uniquely targeted by the violence. I think that's absolutely, that's much of a muchness, as we would say years ago, where I come from. They're brutal towards everybody. The things we hear about and the ones that get on the news are when they beat up and shoot black people. Were you stunned today, were you, as I was, that LeBron James, who's one of the greatest basketball players that ever lived, and sounds like a properly bright dude whenever he's speaking on television or radio. I've heard a few interviews with him. You know, we think of sports people, don't we? Footballers. We don't often give them credit for having a brain. LeBron James, a very bright guy, very articulate. And he's on there having a go at a police officer who shot a girl that was clearly attempting to stab another girl with a knife. And LeBron James tweeted out, "You're next." Okay, you didn't have to be too fancy now to understand what he meant. He was basically saying that the police officer who shot the 16-year-old black girl, if she is 16, that he's next for the Derek Chauvin treatment. But the girl was stabbing somebody. So it's all madness. It's madness, this. And I haven't covered it because it annoys me. So I just ignored it for most of the time. But I was listening to talk radio yesterday. And there's a guy they roll out all the time now. He's a Birmingham professor called Kehinde Andrews. I think Professor Andrews' ancestry is in the Caribbean, I think. And he's articulate and he's bright. But he's an insufferable gobshite, this guy. Kehinde Andrews. I've invited him on this programme and he's flatly turned me down. This guy sees racism everywhere. And he's on with Ian Collins yesterday. And he describes to Collins the George Floyd death, the murder of George Floyd. And he calls it a public lynching, which Ian Collins is not too chuffed about. It's an interesting exchange. Kehinde Andrews, who's a professor who sees racism everywhere. He's living in the UK, where there is no institutional racism, where black people have it just as good as white people, if they want to, in my opinion. Right? No evidence of institutional racism, but he sees it everywhere. Talks about George Floyd, here it is.
You're talking about the way that the police treated that black man in public. It was essentially a public lynching in a country that has a history of lynching and a present of disproportionately.
Why are you throwing the word lynching into this? Why are you invoking the Klan into what is one man's horrendous crime against another?
So you like to live in a world where we don't look at the history, present, the statistics, the whatever's happening.
Kehinde, you could write for the Daily Star with this level of sensationalism, mate. I'm telling you. I mean, lynching.
What's a lynching? What's the definition of a lynching? A public execution of somebody? And
we know what you're trying to say, don't we? I'm not trying to say anything. You're suggesting it's kind of up there with hanging people from trees. It's kind of a very similar thing.
This was a modern day lynching by the police.
You could call it a killing. You'd give it the right context. You'd give it the right level of intelligent analysis, and you wouldn't extrapolate that lynching was the way to define it.
As I am paid for intelligent analysis, I'm pretty sure that is the faith which was given.
I mean, I never heard the prosecutor use the word lynching. I never heard the judge use the word lynching. But
because that's the legal context. The legal context is not the same as the real context. The legal context is what you can prove in court. That is not the same.
In fact,
lynchings, most of them never went to court because they weren't prosecuted.
So anybody that is killed by the police who's black, it's a lynching.
That is not what I said. I said a pop killed in that public spectacle was evokes the idea of a modern day lynching.
So now it's the idea of it evokes the idea. I mean, I think it evoked the idea of police brutality and a madman and a psychopath who didn't know the rules of his job. I mean, whether he meant to kill him. Do you think he meant to kill him for a time?
What were his colleagues? This isn't one bad apple. What were his colleagues?
No, I'm with you. Listen, you're going to get no arguments from me on what happened that day at all. We're on the same page on that.
Yeah, Kehinde Andrews, you see him all the time on GMB, Sky News and Talk Radio and all of that. Listen, if you take what happened at face value last year, and I know that some of you do not, because you tell me incessantly, you're incessant, you can't help yourself, telling me that you believe the entire thing was staged. All right, that's your opinion. I don't know whether it was or whether it wasn't. I can't say, you see. I can't prove a negative. I don't know. But I'm going to take it at face value. Chauvin didn't murder George Floyd. He obviously didn't. He couldn't have intended to murder Floyd. He couldn't. He should have been found guilty of aggravated manslaughter. Finding him guilty of murder is legally unsound. Because you couldn't prove intention. Again, if we take the incident at face value, Chauvin is just a typical redneck, probably steroid-abusing scumbag thug of a cop. Power-tripping. Kneeling on his neck, doesn't give a shit. He wants to humiliate him. He's already handcuffed. He's nobody's problem anymore. And he really should stand up. But he's a thug. And doesn't. And then the guy dies. Again, I acknowledge that some of you don't believe it. That's fine. We can coexist. We can live in the world together. Here's Lou Reed. This is not as good as Take That's Pray Now, but it's a good song, right? Harry was hanging round. Now, that's from the Transformer album. You probably knew that. But if you didn't and you've not got yourself a copy, of the Transformer album. It is a brilliant album. Not a filler track on it. It's often dusted down from my vinyl collection and spun quite regularly, much to the annoyance of the oft-mentioned future missus. I think she likes it, but 25 times a week, I think, would kind of grate on anybody, I would have thought. The former lead singer of the Bay City Rollers, Les McKeown, has died, would you believe it, aged 65, incredibly young. You might be aware of this now. The BBC has reported this in the last 30 minutes. The Edinburgh band, of course, massive success in the 1970s with songs like I Only Want to Be With You, Bye Bye Baby, Shang-A-Lang, of course, and Give a Little Love. It was announced by his family this afternoon. Les McKeown has passed away, and the family is making arrangements for his funeral. And anybody like me who began, I began working in radio in the late 1990s, but before that I spent my evenings, my weekend evenings, working in discotheques. They still called them discotheques back then. At least I think I remember them calling them discotheques. And I would have played a lot of 70s music in the mid-90s, late-90s. Still playing quite a lot of 70s disco when I started doing the old DJing. And you wouldn't get away with not playing a Bay City Rollers tune. So Les McKeown has passed away. That will mean a lot to people. It'll mean a lot to Scottish folks as well. And I heard, over the years, heard him do many an interview, and he always came across as a proper bloke, a top bloke, Les McKeown. So there you go. Age 65. Ar yeshte garev anam. We say back in God's country. The time is 17 and a half minutes past six. Thursday's Richie Allen radio show. You will be aware, of course, unless you've been living under a rock, that David Cameron has been, well, he's been under the microscope. The former UK Prime Minister has been under the microscope lately because of his attempts to gain a bit of favour or a bit of influence on behalf of a company, an investment company called Greensill, which employed him as a lobbyist after he left Number 10 Downing Street. In fact, Cameron didn't go and work for them for quite a while, a couple of years, I think, after he'd left office. But anyway, it doesn't matter. He's been criticised for contacting the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak. He's been accused, well, he admits or he acknowledges that he had a drink with the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, in a bid to, well, to get furlough money for this company, Greensill. Okay? Anyway, it doesn't seem like Cameron was any better at lobbying than he was at prime ministering, because he didn't get his way. But there's been a lot of talk about sleaze. Sleaze. Boris Johnson has been accused of it. His relationship with the blonde bombshell Jennifer Arcuri, that's been brought up as well, and other things about Johnson in the news today. Well, funnily enough, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who happens to be a guy called Justin Welby at the moment, Welby is saying that, I think Welby, see, again, it's been a funny old day for me. I'm listening to things and I'm not quite getting the gist of them. I think it's the heat. Welby appears to be telling the BBC this afternoon that we're holding these people to maybe higher standards than we ought to be. Listen to what he tells the BBC. Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, the Arch.
Isn't this the golden age myth syndrome? That, you know, Churchill was given huge sums of money by his mates. He helped people out, they helped him out. It's how politics worked. We have raised our standards and raised our standards, and of course it's not right to help out your chums or lobby inappropriately or whatever it happens to be. But the standards now are at a level that no 19th century politician would have survived for 1 week. So it's not that morality has disappeared. It's morality has got much more sting and bite than it ever used to. Good. That's great. But let's not pretend that politicians are worse. If anything, they're better.
Hold them to standards.
Hold them to standards.
But don't despair.
Don't despair, and I would say the big thing we've left out is if you're going to raise standards, you need to have a strong ethic of forgiveness and compassion and understanding. Now, you've got to be able to forgive when people mess up, and you've got to be able to distinguish between minor infractions, where the person does need to say sorry, does need to admit they got it wrong, may need to spend some time, you know, on the back benches, but is not destroyed forever, and the really serious failings.
Justin Welby there. We're holding them to a much higher standard than we used to do back in the 1800s. You know, it's okay, people asking for favours in return for favours and all the rest of it, but of course it isn't okay. Why did he feel the need to weigh in on that, do you think? I don't know. I mean, it's distraction anyway, isn't it? Away from the COVID lies and the vaccine injuries. I couldn't care less if David Cameron, acting as a lobbyist for Greensill, tried to get them some favours. Why do I not care less about it? Because that's how it works. It's filthy. It's filthy. It's absolutely filthy. From top to bottom, of course. It unmasks the whole system. Politicians are not there to do what's best for you and for me and for our families as a collective. Let's make life better. Of course not. They're there to serve the people who put them there. They're front men, they're actors and actresses. That's how it is. And unless people start waking up to that fact, they'll never understand what's going on right now and what's coming down the tracks. These people are actors. It does rile me, and I do get riled, when I hear people saying, and I hear, because I listen to people. Most journalists, most real journalists, listen to people's conversations. Not eavesdropping on people or snooping on people, but listening to them. You know, you're out and about, I want to hear what people are saying. What's the mood? What's the mood of the area? And I hear people saying things like, I'll give you an example. Well, Boris has done well with the vaccine rollout. They believe this shit. They believe that it's down to him. They believe that he decided to put the country into lockdown. They believe that. How do you divest them of that belief? How do you pull them out of it? How do you explain to them that this is a pyramid? Boris Johnson is not even, he's not even on the 17th row of bricks from the top. Not even on the 17th. He's a nobody. He's a useful idiot for the people that are really running this madness, this lunatic asylum. And they're a very small group of people. But they believe it. Yeah, Boris, yeah. He'll get a bump in the polls, Boris, now because he's done well with the vaccine rollout. I wonder when Boris will end the lockdown. I wonder will he end it quicker. I hear people saying these things when I'm out and about. I want to slap him around the face. I say, do you honestly believe that it's down to him, that it's his decision? Wake up. It isn't his decision. You know? But, yeah, anyway, there you go. Loads of tweets on this and other things as well. Thanks for them. I've got to take this opportunity to remind you that the Sunday Morning Melodies programme, which has no relationship to the weekly programme, is back on Sunday at 10 o'clock UK time. And that is a two-hour music programme with me reminiscing about a few songs that I like, that I haven't heard for ages, and that means something to me and maybe means something to you as well. So Sunday Morning Melodies back this coming Sunday, the 25th, that's right, at 10 o'clock UK time. Now, the thing about that programme is that is live. It is not podcasted. It is not podcasted. Right, so I do it live, and then I run it on my website on this stream three more times, and then it's deleted. There's two reasons for that. One, it's not really an important radio show at all. And two, I can't put it on the podcast because it will get deleted because the music isn't mine. I have a license to play the music on a live radio programme, which I do, but I can't play the music. I can't record it and then play it. Jesus. It can't be recorded forever, if you understand. God, the power of speech has deserted me in the last couple of minutes. Maybe I never had the power of speech whatsoever. Hi to Mark Griff. How you doing, Mark? Hope you're well, pal. Nice to hear from you this afternoon. I'm nearly done then. Right, lots of interesting tweets. Lots of trolls around today. I love the trolls. Some of them are genuine. Some of them are the 77th Brigade, no doubt. Anytime I post an article about vaccine injury, they pile in, these people. Many of them are accounts that don't seem to be legitimate. They seem to be accounts that are very recent, very new accounts, and with very strange usernames and very, very strange avatars, so I don't know. I will mention as well, Hayden Hewitt will be live from around about 10 o'clock this evening with the big show, The Trigger Warning, guys. Do check that out. Triggerwarning.tv is the website, youtube.com/triggerwarningtv. If you haven't checked Hayden out, do check him out. He's often accompanied by Graham. We love Graham. His pal Graham. Do check him out. Check both of them out. That's it. Right. Okay. I'll see you on Sunday morning at 10 o'clock for Sunday Morning Melodies. Thanks for spending the week with me. And for Richie Allen Show aficionados, for those of you who have no interest in the music programme, I'll be back with you at 5 o'clock on Monday with two brilliant guests. In fact, I've got one very special guest on Monday. I'll tell you more about that maybe over the course of the weekend. All right. Have a great weekend then. Take care of yourselves. It's going to be sunny, so get out in the sun. Spend some time getting some natural vitamin D3, right? Right? Okay. Bye now.